everybody, welcome to a brand new MMA Roasted podcast. It's me, Adam Hunter. I'm here with CB Gold.
I'm back, guys.
We have Vince Pichel coming in, and it is a pleasure to have one of the guys that I've always looked up to. He was the first guy that I've ever trained with, the first professional fighter that I've ever actually rolled with. Mac Danzig is here. How are you, Mac?
Good, man. Thanks for having me.
Now, me and Mac go way back. I mean, what, like 9 years ago, I walked into Legends Gym. I had never taken a jiu-jitsu class or MMA class or anything. And then they're like, they paired me up with you. My first class ever. And I think I might have got subbed, I don't know, 10 times in like 2 minutes, 3 minutes. And I was like so pissed. I was like, Jesus, I was beating myself up. And you're like, hey, man, if it was a wrestling match, you would have won. And I was like, man, that actually made me feel a lot better about my life. Because I think I was contemplating suicide at that point. But you were a great teacher. I used to go to your class all the time. It was a lot of fun, man.
Oh, man. Yeah. I remember rolling with you, man. Yeah, you were always really strong, you know. But keep in mind, you were coming from like zero background of submissions. You were just, you know, what were you, like a state champ in Maine or something, yeah. Wrestling? Yeah. So like, I, you know, you had like really, really good takedowns and really good base and really strong. It was just, you know, I had been doing it for a while. So I already knew how to deal with people that, you know, didn't have any submission background. But yeah, man, I mean, that you were really tough to deal with.
Oh, thanks, man. That meant a lot to me. And that I was actually like, it was like I gained a whole new respect for that, because at that time you weren't in the Ultimate Fighter yet. You were just trying out. I remember some of your classes. Remember those two meatheads that were in class? They were these two like steroid freaks. And I remember one time I actually tapped one of them with just a straight headlock, a head and arm, and looking at you and you were laughing. And that made me feel really cool. But that was actually a good that gym. We were talking about Legends Gym in Hollywood.
Yeah.
It had Dan Hardy was there,
uh-huh.
Connor Hewn. There was all these like crazy fighters there,
yeah.
And it was actually a really good, very pure, innocent time.
Yeah, it was good. I had a good time there while it lasted. But then once I won the show and everything, I took off to Vegas, because at the time my mentality was, you know, I had been going out there for training camps for years anyway to train with Gray Maynard and Tyson Griffin and Mike Pyle and those guys, and then I just said to myself, well, I gotta bounce, because I gotta train at where the champs train. You know,
right,
what I mean? That was my mentality, and I probably could have done a lot better if I would maybe not stayed in LA, but went to somewhere that was a little more chill. But yeah, I had to take off. But yeah, it was a good time while it lasted, man. It was fun, man. There was some always somebody coming through. You know, Carl was there for a while.
But yeah, but you were fighting before it was even like a thing. Like you were, I mean, you're like a real OG. I mean, you became, right, weren't you like a skateboarder who,
yeah,
then became a fighter,
yeah,
slash photographer?
Yeah, I dedicated my pretty much all of my teenage years to skateboarding, and I wasn't just dorking around. I was trying to become pro, or at least do something in the skateboarding industry, like filming or photography or something like that. And I had some flow sponsors, but I was never pro or anything. I just never quite got good enough. And then I found training and fighting, and then I just kind of, you know, went from there. I had been watching the UFC since it was just barely starting, you know, like 1994. I was 14 years old, and I was just like, man, this is crazy. Like I gotta learn how to fight, you know. And I started watching it, and I watched it for years and rented whatever VHS tapes that I could from video stores that had the UFC, and I watched it change from like a spectacle into a sport. Weight classes got implemented, you know, sanctioning bodies got involved, yada yada, and I was watching the whole time. And then it wasn't until about year 2000 I had a chance to start training, and I was like, man, this is what I want to do. So,
do you have any wrestling background?
No, I don't. I don't. No, I never wrestled. I wish I did. You know,
but your jiu-jitsu was on point.
Yeah, I started out with like no-gi jiu-jitsu. Was kind of like my base, my foundation was just like submission grappling or whatever you want to call it. And I took to that real quick. Some people learn that real quickly, and it's not, unless you come from a really long time striking background, it's usually pretty easy to get gain an understanding of jiu-jitsu, because everything is just so hands-on and the balance is pretty apparent. The things that are tough are, in my opinion, are the boxing and the wrestling. Those are the hard things.
Your boxing, though, I was reading, like, some of the guys you train with. I mean, you train with Freddie Roach.
Yeah.
You train with Gil Martinez.
Yeah, Gil Martinez is awesome, yeah.
You think he was your favorite boxing instructor?
Gil Martinez is my favorite boxing coach, yeah. Like Gil taught me, he was mostly like a mitt guy, you know, he'd just hold the mitts, but he taught me a whole lot of stuff and opened up my eyes and gave me a lot of understanding with my boxing. And my MMA coach, my wrestling coach and MMA coach all together, Rico Ciparelli, kind of he taught me a whole lot of stuff about body mechanics that not only worked for just wrestling but for boxing and everything else.
No, I remember when I saw you lose, I was like, fuck this sport, because I was like because this dude, I must have tapped me 75 times in a minute. I'm like, this guy's never gonna lose. I remember when you won the Ultimate Fighter, I'm like, there's nobody who's gonna beat Mac Danzig. And then I think your first loss was to Clay Guida, right?
Yeah, I lost the decision to Clay Guida, yeah.
And that's when I'm like, he's probably one of the most frustrating guys to fight, because it's just nonstop. It's like going on a treadmill at 10 the entire time, right?
Yeah. It's not, you know what it was? It was weird. I expected him to fight that way, but if you look back at my fight with him, that was the first time that he decided to pull the stalling game. Now, Clay's a great guy. He's an awesome fighter. He's awesome, but you know, he did that against me, and I wasn't expecting that, because in his fights prior to fighting me, every time he got someone down, he started going all caveman on him and just, like, going 100%, and that's what his fight with Tyson Griffin was like. That's what his fight with Roger Huerta was like. And I was counting on the possibility of him, if he got me down, leaving openings to scramble and get back up, because he was so wild with it. But he just held. He held really tight, and he had really good positioning, and his grip was hard to break, and he just held, and he did the same thing to Nate Diaz. He beat Nate by decision right after he fought me with the same type of tactics. So every now and then Clay throws a wrench in there and changes things up, and that's what he did that night, and I wasn't expecting it. He had good cardio, but it was mostly he was just relentless with wanting to hold me down.
And it's got to be hard to train for a guy like that, because who at the gym is going to emulate that, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, most guys they want to move, they want to, you know, they want to create something and want to try to pass. But see, Clay was one of those guys. People would train with him and roll with him and be like, "Oh man, Mac, you're gonna tear this guy up," because I rolled with him and I just was tapping him all over the place. But what they don't understand is, when you get in there and fight, it's different than when you're just rolling. Like, I think Clay, you know, if he's just rolling in the room and he's just trying to, you know, go with the flow and play the game, he'll probably get caught and stuff. But in the fight, man, he knows exactly what to do and what not to do, and he's not going to leave himself open for anything. So, yeah, the fight's a whole different...
That's like Dan Hardy, probably the same thing, right?
Yeah, Dan's similar in a different way, yeah.
People are like, oh, I rolled them, you're definitely going to beat him, and then you get right. And the next thing you know, you're fucking looking at the ceiling.
Yeah, some people are gamers, man. They bring it in the fight, and the training doesn't tell the tale of how good they are, you know?
So how much do you miss it?
I miss it a lot. I there's a lot of things I don't miss about it. I don't miss like all the pressure and everything. I don't miss the weight cutting, that's for sure. But I definitely miss the competition. And the sport is getting, like, really, you know, saturated with really good high level guys, and I love watching it. At the same time, then there's a lot of guys that I'm looking at. I'm like, man, I want to go in there. I want to slap this guy around. No, but yeah, you know, I train with some fighters and I teach some fighters and stuff, and it keeps that spark going in me, like, and it keeps me reminding me that I am still good and I still.
So let's actually plug your gym right now. So if I'm in LA,
yeah,
and I want to train with Mac Danzig, what do I do?
Well, you could go to one of two places. You could either contact me directly and train with me at my home studio, and I do privates
and
there.
Contact you how?
You would email me at MacDanzigMMA at yahoo.com, And then if you want to do like a group class or a larger group class, I teach out a Strong Sports Gym, which is in which is downtown. Strong Sports Gym, yeah.
I'm telling you, once I get my leg fixed, I'm coming back for that rematch, dude.
There you go.
Don't hold your breath, man.
Now, let's talk about the weekend. So, first of all, the Sunday night was the comedy show at the Laugh Factory. It was me, Brian Callen, Mike E. Winfield, Dana White, Matt Serra, and Dean Thomas performed.
And David Spade.
And David Spade. All did stand up, and I hosted. I was nervous, man. It's like, first of all, you know, watching Luke Rockhold get knocked out was a big wake up call. Because at first I'm like, oh, I'm gonna smash this crowd. Then I'm like, I don't know how confident I should get right now, because you never want to underestimate any audience. And I'm like, man, it would suck to bomb in front of all MMA fans, because they're the ones who are gonna let me hear it on like Twitter. So I was like, totally kind of going over my set. I'm like, all right, I have regular jokes I'm gonna do for my act. And then I got to put MMA jokes, because if like you can't do them here, you know, where are you going to do them? So the show was at 6. It was a sold-out show. And CB, how'd it go?
Wow. It was a really fun night. It was some great comedians. The fighters did very, very well. I think Dean Thomas dropped more
N-bombs. Talk about me right now. I don't get to the fighters.
Okay. Let's put it this way, guys. I was there. I watched Adam. Like he said, there were a bunch of MMA fans there. So it worked out to his MMA roasted gimmick. But let's just say I had to walk through a few blood puddles walking out of the comedy club, because Adam murdered that room.
Oh, thanks, man. Appreciate it. And by the way, I did not pay CB to say this. He actually texted me this after the show. It was a great – I was having fun. It was one of those shows where I was like, man, this is awesome. This is why I do all those horrible, shitty shows for shows like this. It's like, this is why – I'm sure, Mac, you could say all those nights where you're like, the fuck am I doing? You're just rolling, you're dripping sweat, yeah. You're getting tapped by, you know, 8th degree black belts or whatever, yeah. You're doing, or All American Wrestlers taking you down, or yeah. You're getting lit up. It's for that night where you knock out Joe Stevenson, yeah. In the first round. And that's how I felt with MMA, with this show. It was just, it was great. I had a blast. And I'll tell you, Dean Thomas has a future in comedy. I knew he was going to be good, because he's taking like three... class. He's in like three improv troupes. So in Miami, it's something he aspires to do. So I knew he was going to be good, and he was great. And I'll tell you, Dana White was so nervous backstage. He was sweating, arm sweat. Like he was like visibly scared almost. But he went on and he killed. He had great jokes, and the crowd loved it. And same with Sarah. Sarah was also nervous. I'm like, and I'm giving him advice. I'm like, Sarah, just be you. Just, you're already hilarious as it is. And Sarah had a great set. And it was a great night. I think the crowd loved it. And it went really well. I was thrilled to be a part of it. I was so happy. It was a lot of fun. Matt Serra unblocked me on Twitter. He told me he was mad at me because I said he has to lose 30 pounds to make heavyweight. And
then Dana said the same fucking thing.
Well, yeah, that was the thing. And then, yeah, I was super happy with it. And it was cool. We actually talked a lot about, me and Dana talked about the Rockhold fight and UFC 199, which we're going to get into right now. So I was at UFC 199, and... it was me, Bubba, Tyler went, and I took Bree, my girlfriend. It was one of those things where it was like, I'm like, CB was upset, kind of, but at the same time, you sold your tickets. And
I knew this was going to pop up on the podcast.
Bubba is a fighter, but me and CB squashed it. We're cool, right?
Yeah, we're cool. All
right, good.
So, yeah. What you guys talking
now?
About?
So I had four tickets, and I was taking Bree and Tyler, my other co-host, how I was leaving. And then I took Bubba Jenkins, who's a professional fighter.
Start from the beginning. You were supposed to take your dad.
I was going to take my dad. My dad, the last minute, was like, Adam, I have to work. I can't go. So I had an extra ticket. So I took. Anyway, so let's talk about the fights from the ground up. I was super impressed with Bruce Leroy. I did not see him smashing Cole Miller like that. Cole almost got the armbar in the third. I was like, but he didn't finish it, which I was surprised, because it looked like he was very, very close to finishing it. Bruce Leroy, and I was talking to you guys before the show, would that Cole Miller have beaten BJ Penn?
No.
You don't think he would have?
No.
Mac?
I did not see that fight. I didn't see that fight. No, I only watched the co-main and the main.
Okay. Well, Cole Miller, he looked a little flat.
He just got shut down.
Bruce Leroy looked great. He almost pulled it off, though, in the third. And then it was funny because Bubba was saying chocolate melts in the third. But no, so Cole Miller, that was rough to watch. I'll tell you, the James Vick fight, I did not see that going down. I mean, Beneil Dariush beat Vick at his own game, which is boxing. He got outstruck by a grappler, which is crazy. I mean, Mac, sometimes do you understand, does that happen sometimes with fighters? Like, okay, the guy's predominantly a boxer, and he's fighting a grappler, so you think there's no way this guy's going to beat me in boxing, and then he catches you?
And then you underestimate the person. Yeah, I mean, lots of times that can be a good game plan to implement is giving somebody a taste of their own medicine. And if they had spent 8 to 12 weeks training on nothing but defending the takedown, and they're not even thinking about their boxing, and you just change up the rhythm by getting in their face and throwing combos and stuff, that's going to throw a lot of people off, man. And that's another thing about the sport. It's not just how good you are and how good you are in the room, but your ability to adapt. You know, that's the name of the game, man.
How good was your ability to adapt? As far as,
you know, I think it was pretty good. I'm not satisfied with what I did in my career. I mean, like I feel like I did some things that I'm proud of and everything, but like, you know, there's people who are like, I'm just happy to be here and I worked hard to be here and I'm happy to be here. And there's people that want to be like a champion or a world beater, you know what I mean? And I went back and forth with it, but for the most part, I was the latter, and I didn't want to end up, you know, I wanted to fight the Ben Hendersons of the world, you know what I mean? And I never got there, you know what I mean? So like, I feel like my ability to adapt wasn't bad. But like I probably learned a whole lot about that and fighting and understanding the psychology of it and how to respond to certain situations a lot better once I retired, you know. It's just, that's the way it goes.
But you're also a kid. I mean, did you finish high school?
No, I did not.
So you're a kid who didn't finish high school.
Yeah.
Your goal was to be a professional skateboarder.
Yeah, yeah.
And now you're fighting in the highest level. You're in the pros of fighting.
Yeah, sure.
You
sure.
won the Ultimate Fighter.
Yeah.
You fought in Japan. I mean, you've accomplished a lot, dude. You're a black belt too?
Yeah, yeah, black belt in jiu-jitsu. Yeah, I mean, I'm happy with a lot of things, but you know, that's most people that are super competitive, you know, they're not satisfied. You know, if you talk to, like, I mean, like one of my closest friends in the sport is Gray Maynard, and I know he won't talk about it. He's not a complainer, but I know it still hurts him that he didn't make the Olympics in wrestling. I know that it still hurts him that he wasn't a national champ. You know, he's all American two or three times, but you know, like everybody's got their level of competitive spirit, and you know, I feel like I didn't accomplish what I could have, and most people don't. But the only difference between, you know, someone that barely makes it into the UFC or doesn't, you know, and someone who's like, you know, like a world champion lots of times, is just the drive, you know. That's
but did you have the drive?
I had it, and then I had a whole lot of self-doubt, you know. No doubt about that, you know. Like, a lot of people deal with that, and then I think I beat myself more than anyone ever beat me, you know. I think when everything becomes apparent to you what this whole thing is about, you sit back and you look at it and you say, you know what, it's a fight against yourself the whole time, you know. That's what the main thing is you're fighting yourself, and you got to learn how to do that properly. And I was always putting myself down, and I wasn't believing in myself, and everyone around me is just like, what's with this guy, man? He's really good. And you know, it can only take you so far. I wanted to avoid being the dude who was like, oh, how do you say it? Like, I wanted to avoid being the guy who was like, oh, I'm the greatest thing in the world, and then you get smashed, you know what I mean? So I was always, like, thinking I was being realistic about it, but I was just being hard on myself the whole time, you know?
I can totally identify with that. Even as a comic, I'm like that. It's like, I have a great set. Yeah, but I didn't record it.
Right.
Or, yeah, but I didn't do any new jokes. Yeah, but I didn't do that. Yeah, it was an easy crowd.
Right.
Yeah, it was like, yeah, but it's always, I understand exactly what you're saying.
Yeah, totally, yeah.
But, you know, it's good that, look, you're a young guy. What are you, like, 36?
Yeah, I'm 36,
I mean, you're not even a third way dead.
Yeah.
So, I mean, for a 36-year-old to accomplish what you've accomplished.
Yeah, I appreciate it, man. I feel good. I'm happy with a lot of things that I've done. But like back to the question being, like, did I have good ability to adapt? Like, in a way, I did. Like, I was tough, you know, like there was no way anybody was just going in there and steamrolling me like real quick or anything, but
except for Melvin.
Yeah, the Melvin
just kept
fight.
Fucking with you.
Yeah, no, that was the only fight I got blown out of the water in, like, you know, and but like, you know, it wasn't a real quick fight or anything. It was just like it was a bad night for me, man. And when he's on, he's hard to deal with. You know,
I still think he's probably one of the guys in the UFC or in all of fighting who could have been. He's that guy in the gym that you're like, he could have been one of the best ever.
Yeah, it's like if I fight Melvin five times, he could knock me out five times and I submit him real quick the other five times. It's like, it's you never know which Melvin you're getting.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and he was on when I fought him, and he's a good fighter, man. And that was right when I was realizing that I couldn't take the shots anymore. I had too many years of concussions and subconcussive injuries. In sparring way too hard for too many years, and it all cut up.
You also boxed, right?
I had one boxing fight, but like it was all that wasn't the deal. The problem was the years of hard sparring and not taking a rest in between sparring sessions. You know, getting hit hard, taking it, and just keep going. You know, that's what screwed me up, and that's what screws a lot of people up. They lose their chin in the gym. You remember how. Chuck Liddell would be pretty much impossible to knock out, and you could hit him with whatever, and he was just standing there, and he would just throw the left hook at you and not even blink. And then all of a sudden, one fight, he's going to sleep, and people are tapping him. He's going to sleep, and the body figures out how to defend itself, and it reacts that way. And now I don't go to sleep, but if I go to spar in the gym and I get hit on the chin, like my legs will go out from under me for a second, and that's enough to make the ref go, oh, and almost stop the fight. And then if your opponent follows it up with another punch or two, the fight stops.
So that was happening to you in the gym?
That was happening to me in the gym. I got knocked out, like not out cold, but like I got like pretty much KO'd, like to the point where my body wasn't responding for like a good 5 or 10 seconds. A week and a half, my last sparring session before I fought Melvin. So like I'm going into a fight against a guy that hits so hard, knowing that like I can't take a shot. So I just went in there and that's probably why I fought so standoffishly. You know what I mean? I would corner him and I wouldn't exchange because I didn't want to exchange with him. And then he would throw something, I'd back up and then I'd.
Now, were you sparring with 4 ounce gloves or were you sparring with?
No, I was sparring with 16. It was a kick I took. Yeah.
What the fuck is kicking you a week before the fight?
Right, you're right. However, but the problem wasn't the partner or the fact that I got kicked too hard or anything like that. It wasn't even that hard of a kick. We weren't going that hard. It was just that I had been hurt in practice many times leading up to that even. You know what
That's
I mean?
That's bullshit. Yeah, if I'm your coach and some dude throws a kick and buckles you
before
the fight, that dude's out of the gym.
Yeah. I know. The problem was like my ability to – I mean, I used to be able to take shots like a champ, you know. Like I could take any shot on the chin, I could take it and – you know, I might see stars for a second, but I keep going. And then my ability to take the shots just dwindled. And so, you know, like I'm taking a year off of sparring now.
How
I feel.
A year off sparring? Of course, you're not fighting. What are
well,
you
yeah, I mean, I still like to get in there and move around with the guys every now and then. You know what I mean? The fighters that I'm teaching and stuff and that I'm working with, I like to give them a good look, and I like just, I mean, I love the craft. I love boxing. I love MMA, and I like to get in there and mix it up. And around March, me and my wife decided that it was best that I take a year off. I was actually talking to a guy who's a good friend of mine now that I fought once is Matt Wyman.
Yeah.
And Matt said, hey.
Handsome.
Yeah, handsome Matt Wyman. Yeah, he's a good guy. And we were talking because he lives up in Portland, and I'm thinking about moving up there. And he said, how about taking some – I told him about my issues with the shots and everything. He said, how about taking a year off? I'm like, a year? A year with no sparring? That's no fun.
Dude,
you
listen,
know?
If you're not fighting, you don't need to be sparring. Look, I love you,
Matt. It's so much fun, though.
I know, you fucking psycho. All right? I mean, you're worse than this psycho. Listen, if you're going to come back and fight, then yeah, it's spar. But now just relax. You've had a ton of wars, man. You were fighting that – like, come on. And plus all that, you know. So, more fights. I'll tell you, Jessica Penny's fight.
I was hoping you brought that up because that was unreal.
That girl she fought, what's her
name?
Jessica Andrade. And you know what? I see it a lot. I saw it with that other girl, that Valerie Letourneau. when a girl goes down from 135 to 115, there is a huge difference. The only time I see it, the only time I see it not work was that with that boxer girl in the UFC against who made the finals against Juliana Pena. Yeah.
Jessica Roccozzi.
Yeah, she. But I think it's like, but these girls like Valerie, and now this other girl.
Well, Valerie's at 125 now.
Well, okay.
But before that,
I think it's like almost like losing 40 pounds for a dude because I just feel like they're just so much stronger at 115 if they've normally fight at 135.
My wife fights at 115, and I can tell you just by watching her train with some other female fighters and watching, you know, some of her fights, like she only cuts like 5 pounds, like, you know, the week of the fight, and these other girls are really big, and like with you know, the lower you get in weight, every pound makes a big difference. And you're fighting at 205, you know, the guy walks around 218, you walk around at 225, not that big of a deal. You probably won't even notice it. Those guys fluctuate, you know, day to day that much. But with the girls and with anyone at that 115, man, that's a huge,
especially
huge
difference. Maybe it's because you know, women's MMA is a little bit still behind men's MMA, and you know, I'm sure the girls even admit that, just because there's less fighters out there, it hasn't been around as long. I mean, now it's finally, you know, becoming not as, you have to be a master at one domain, like the judo star versus the boxer. You know, it's sort of like it's become more of a hybrid. But this girl, Jessica Penny, is a tough girl, a great fighter, and she just got steamrolled.
It looked like Joanna too.
It looked like, and that girl is going to give Jessica. But she's a girl that lost to Raquel Pennington, right?
On Judge?
Yeah.
I think so. I think one of the things that she said, though, was she said, you know, I dropped to 115 because there is no happy medium right now, so I dropped to 20. She said, I was hoping I didn't lose my power, which you can never really tell until you actually get in there. She said, I might get faster, but if I lose the power, it could be different. And she just got in there. I don't think Jessica Penne landed more than like 2 or 3 punches
the
whole time.
She looked like a mini Tyson, that little chick.
And she's such a sweetheart. But she was just steamrolling her. And I was talking to her after the fight, and she actually gave me her Media Day press board that I still have in my car.
Sweet.
She signed it.
Nice.
But I didn't expect that fight to go that way at all. I thought it was going
to
be way more competitive.
I thought Penny was going to take it to the ground, use her jiu-jitsu, do her like crazy thing. I mean, and it was a beatdown. And I felt bad because I like Jessica a lot. And she's not the kind of girl. You know, you see fighters a lot of times, they can shrug it off. They lose the next day. They're partying that night. I'll never forget. I'm with Chad Mendes the night he loses to Conor McGregor, and he's having a party. Granted, he just got $500,000. I'd probably be having a party too. Okay, but I've seen it too. I'm sure Mac, you've seen some fighters, they lose, and it's like they didn't even have a fight.
Yeah.
Versus other guys that you don't hear from them for a week or two or a month or 2 months.
I was the latter. Like that even when I won. I was like, I'm out of here. Like I don't want to see the inside of the gym. I don't want, you know. But yeah, man, it's the highest high and the lowest low. And I never really. It's not that I don't understand it. I guess I can understand it, but I never was of the personality of, okay, well, everything that I worked for the past 12 weeks is just completely shot, and that was horrible, and that didn't go the way it went. Oh, let's go and have some drinks and just forget about it. Like, I mean, I put so much into it that I'm just thinking to myself, man, like you know, I just want to play the fight over and over again in my head. Like it's torturous, but that's what you end up doing. Like, when I lost to Josh Neer, I pulled an all-nighter. I just sat up all freaking night just thinking of it, you know, I think anybody that's really dedicated or really cares, that's what's going to happen.
And then everyone wants to ask you about the fight, right? Because that's the thing about fighting. When I wrestled in high school, if I lost a match, you didn't see me for 2 weeks. Right. I mean, and I was at boarding school, and you couldn't even hide. And I would not leave my room because I felt like I let everybody down.
Yeah.
I let my friends down. I'm a loser. This is the only thing I have going for me. Now what? Without wrestling, I have nothing. Granted, a lot of that comes from being a 16-year-old and a 15-year-old. But I can only imagine being a fighter where everybody you meet is like, when's your next fight? Or who do you want to fight next? Or what's it like being – that's all they talk about. It's probably hard to look at yourself as, no, I'm Mac Danzig. I'm not just a fighter. Right. There's more to me.
Yeah.
Correct?
Totally, man. Yeah, it was always hard for me. And then you compound that with like the criticisms that people give you online and everything like that. Or not just online, but just, I don't know. It's mostly online is a big medium that people use to you know,
tell you what you could have done better.
Yeah, yeah. Everyone's an expert, you know. And, you know, it's funny, like, and I'm not saying this to sound like some sort of a tough guy or some stuff like that, but, like, you know, out of all the shit-talking that happened to me, like, throughout my career, and people, like, not liking me for just odd reasons or deciding that they didn't like me for what I didn't eat or whatever, the funniest thing about all that is never once did anybody, and I would have had respect for them if they did, come up to me and be like, you know what, I didn't like the way that you said this or that, or I don't think you're that good of a fighter or whatever that is. That no one ever once criticized me, like talked to me to my face. And I'm not saying like, oh, well, they didn't do it because they're scared, because I would have kicked their ass. It's not that I would, like, do something to them physically. It's just, even, like, a one-on-one in person, I've never had anyone confront me
or
say anything. It's just, the online thing is very
but
weird.
But you actually quit the internet, correct?
I didn't quit it completely. I you know, I still have, like I'm not on Facebook at all. I can't mess with Facebook.
Right.
Like, Facebook is just, that's the devil right there. I had a little Instagram account that me and my wife use because we, you know, we just promote our, you know, our brand or whatever. And you know, like that we're teaching classes and privates. And she teaches women's classes and kids' classes and stuff. And, I'm on Instagram. I still have a Twitter account. I don't use it that much anymore, but you never know. I might jump back into it. But yeah, I stay away from most of that stuff. I don't get on those forums or anything.
Okay, so we got Vince coming in. Vince, so can you keep that, Vince? Okay, so cool. Yeah, no, I mean, and I hear you. I think that you, there's one thing about you, Mac, is that you are a really... You're a very real person. You know, you're actually like, you're not a... Hey, shut up, Miles. I mean, you are, you know, you're exactly the person you are. You're not like one of these guys that's going to act a certain way or, you know, it's just, that's you.
Yeah, I believe in authenticity. Like, I look for that in everything that I do, whether it's like anything that I'm into, any kind of art or anything like that. Like, I appreciate authenticity. That's why I really like that the Johanna... Yo Jacek or whatever her name, I don't know how to pronounce
her
name.
Yeah.
I really liked when she first came out. I'm not sure what's going on with her now because she's kind of
blown up.
I feel like
she's
buying into
I'm a celebrity.
Hey,
well, she's buying into feeling like she needs to promote fights by creating conflict.
But
which is what she's doing on the Ultimate Fighter show. But regardless of that, like, if you put that to the side, man, I saw, like, when she fought Carla Esparza and Jessica Penney, I saw someone who was, like, when she got in those girls' faces, she meant it. You know what I mean? Like it wasn't, you know, she had a lot of game, you know what I mean?
Oh, she's a different level.
And I just appreciate authenticity, like, on all levels, you know? And I try to embody that as much as I can because I just, I can't hang with the fakeness, man. It's just too much for me. You know?
No, I think a lot of people. Now, by the way, you being a vegan, me, like, personally, I love animals. I have a dog that was used as bait for pit bull fighting. I have two cats. And now my girlfriend, recently there was a cat that was following her around by her dumpster. And she was feeding it every night. She was feeding this cat. So it turns out the cat's pregnant. And it was pregnant a couple months ago. And we don't know where the kittens went. I think they all died. So now the cat is pregnant again.
What's up,
brother? Have a seat. Yeah. By the way, Vince Pichel just showed up, a fellow UFC fighter. I don't know if you know Mac Danzig.
Hey, how you doing, man?
Good to meet you.
Good to meet
you. So let's cut to the fact that... So now she already has a cat, and my girlfriend's roommate was like, I don't know, it's living in the bathroom, and I can't use the bathroom now because there's a cat in here. So I have two bathrooms in my apartment. So I'm like, all right, you know what? I'll take – we could put one of the cats in the bathroom. So now I have a pregnant cat in my bathroom. And this cat, what I didn't realize, it was a wild cat. So it has no idea how to use the litter box. So it's peeing all over the fucking bathroom. This cat smells like absolute dog shit. I took it to actually get groomed today. They were like, we're not going to groom a pregnant cat because it's never seen water before or a bath.
A cat smells like dog shit?
Yeah, right, exactly. It smells like urine. So I have like baby wipes for cats now. I've been hand cleaning it. Yeah. So now I have. So if anybody wants lives in LA and wants kittens, let me know because I'm about to. So I actually periscoped it before, and someone's like, "You got the cat pregnant?" I'm like, "Yeah, I got the cat pregnant. Thank you."
Yeah, but don't you have cat herpes?
So that no, the other cat has cat herpes.
I know.
Okay, so that being said.
That's how you make a cat woman, right?
Yeah, right, exactly. So now I have
interspecies.
So Vince Pichel is here. Before we get into the rest of the fights, because we have to talk about the main event. We got to talk about the Ariel Helwani thing. We got to talk about Brock Lesnar. We got to talk about Nate Diaz versus Conor McGregor 2.
Kimbo
Slice.
But we
got a guy, Kimbo Slice, passing away. Rest in peace, Kimbo Slice. We have a guy here that started fighting at age 26 years old. Had never fought before other than in backyards in Simi Valley, okay? He then made the UFC in 3 years of training, having no formal training. Joined Big John McCarthy's gym.
Yep.
And tried out like the Ultimate Fighter. And won his first 8 fights, right?
Seven.
Seven fights.
7-0 out of 10.
7-0, all stoppages, correct?
Yeah, all knockouts, first or second round.
No one
went past the second.
So he joins the UFC. He ends up going to the Ultimate Fighter. He loses on the Ultimate Fighter, right?
Yeah, lost to Ally Quinta. Ally Quinta. Semifinals.
Then you made the UFC.
I want a rematch too, Al.
And you fought that guy Rustam,
my ass kicked.
He suplexed you 19 times on your back. you went unconscious due to a suplex. Okay. However, your next fight was against Anthony Njikawani.
Oh no! I fought a small guy. I fought Garrett Whiteley and then Njikawani.
So you won your last two fights.
Yeah.
You beat Anthony Njikawani, and then
I beat the hell out of him.
You fucked up your back. Really bad, because while you're in the UFC, you're working at AAA.
Yeah, no, it was my shoulder, actually.
Your shoulder?
Yeah, I pulled my shoulder changing a tire.
Well, right. Which shows you how fucked up payment is for the UFC guys. I mean, what other sport do you have a professional athlete working AAA? Is there anybody on the Lakers working AAA right now? Or even, I don't even think guys that play professional Major League Soccer are working AAA, but Vince is.
Probably not.
So how? But you haven't fought in 2 years. How's it going? How are you, man?
I'm doing good, actually. I was struggling there for a while, but I just kept the smile on my face, kept going. Everything's going good now.
Are you back in the gym?
Yeah, I'm back in the gym training. That whole shoulder incident, it was pretty fucked. I had to go through a workman's comp battle, which I'll never do again. It dragged out for like 2 years because my manager that at the time was trying to, tell workman's comp that I'm fully healed and I'm fighting this and that, because I was doing the USO tours for the troops.
Right.
So I went to Texas for a couple weeks and I went to the Middle East to, visit the troops.
I got you on that tour.
Live in the world. Yeah, that was really cool. Thank you for that.
No problem.
Tell your dad thank you too.
Yes.
And so the whole time I'm battling with these dickheads, kind of just going through the motions. I couldn't train. I was afraid to train. They had people following me around, so I was kind of going through that bullshit. It's all over now. They paid me to go away, so it's over. I'm training now and getting back in there. I want to fight again soon.
So what gym are you at now?
Now I'm all over the place right now, honestly. Big John's closed down recently.
Really?
Yeah. It did?
Are you serious?
Yeah, I don't know why.
I didn't know about that.
I wasn't training because of my shoulder surgery.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, because he had actually talked to me a while ago. Well, it was around maybe 9 months ago. And he had wanted to start have a new person come in and teach a kids program, and it was a really good offer. And just because of my home situation and like I couldn't move at the time,
you're in Culver City, aren't you?
I'm near Culver City. Yeah,
you train at PKG, right?
I used to. Okay. Yeah. Not so much anymore. I teach out of Strong Sports, which is a gym downtown, and I just teach people one on one, like at my place.
Oh, right on.
But yeah, man, John's a great guy, man. I got a lot of respect for him, man. I didn't know his place went under, man.
Same here.
So where are you training?
I don't really know logistics of it, but it just sucks because that's like my home gym. That's where I started, and I'm still with my coach Brian Peterson, but now I'm just kind of all over the place. Like, I go to the Jet Center, train with Peter Cunningham. That's where I go kickboxing. I train at Street Sports in Simi with my buddy, with the Bonds and a couple of friends over there.
Are you training with any pros or no?
No, well, just mainly jiu-jitsu guys over there. Over at the Jet Center, yeah, like, I got a couple good training partners who were like, I got this guy, Herman Baltazer. I just call him Baltazer, actually. His name is Baltazar. He's a really good kickboxer. He's traveling around the world now, basically whooping everyone's ass. His first kickboxing fight, he fought in WCK and whooped the Argentina's, I think it's Argentina, their their world champion, who was like 67-1 or something like that, and he came out oh and oh, whooped this dude's ass. Like, that's how badass he is. But he's just so like quiet about himself. He, you know what I mean? So I have really good training partners, but I'm just bouncing around right now.
I mean, are you nervous though? That like, does it worry to you that you're not at like a one stop shop? Like a you're not at an Alliance. You're not at a ATT. You're not at a AKA.
Honestly,
versus you're trying to do your own thing.
No, because I mean, those places are great, and I love Alliance, and I love going to places like that because it's like everyone, and you got beasts in those places. But I mean, I'm just kind of just doing whatever. Like, it doesn't really matter to me. Whatever I have to do, I'm going to do it.
Can I say something?
You hear whatever you want.
I think that that's actually better because I
going to different gyms.
Yeah, going to different gyms and experiencing different environments and different types of practices and not being like, oh, well, I got to be at Greg Jackson's or I got to be at Couture's or I got to be at this place or that place. Like when you become a part of those places, it's cool because yeah, like it's a one-stop shop and everything's there, but it's a dogfight all the time, and we're all tough knuckleheads and we're all willing to beat the crap out of each other, and that's what ends up happening. Like that's for 2 years, all it was like me, Gray Maynard, Tyson Griffin, Mike Pyle, Martin Campman, Jay Haran, all just going 100% with each other all the time. And that's contributed to me losing my chin. You know what I mean? If you are just working around with people here and there and you go where you want, when you want, it's I think as long as you got your head screwed on right, that's actually probably better.
Plus, it seems like a lot of guys, if you're with the same guys every day, they know what you're going to do. Yeah. You know what they're going to do, right? Yeah. Versus you kind of.
Right.
Yeah, and it's kind of like a variety, too. Like he was saying, like, you get different bodies, different people. And honestly, sometimes, like, me training, like, when I went to Alliance, I started getting stale a little bit. Like, kind of, like, it started becoming, like, a job or routine. And I don't really like that kind of routine thing. Mm-hmm. I like shit just being, like, just everywhere, you know what I mean? Like, all over the place. Because then I don't get used to something.
Totally.
And I like that.
Now, last time you were on the show, you broke up with the girl. You were
supposed to get married last year.
You were supposed to get married. You were totally fucked up.
Yeah.
Is everything okay now?
Yeah, everything's good.
Are you guys back together?
No. I don't even talk to her still. And yeah, I don't even talk to her.
You're done?
Yeah, we're done. All I'm going to say is, like, I wish her the best of luck. I mean, I don't really want to say, I want to say, fuck you, you're a dumb bitch. But,
yeah.
I mean, I wish her nothing but the best.
Okay.
Shit happens, and I understand that. So it is what it is.
Are you with any chicks now or no?
Yeah, I'm seeing someone right now.
Wait, where'd you meet her? Tinder?
Actually,
Bumble?
No, I'm not down for those dating sites. There's a lot of catfishes on there. I mean, I don't know, but I presume.
Right.
No, it's true.
Bitches. I don't trust bitches if they're not in front of my face. You know
what
I mean? I've been catfished several times on those sites.
I think you are the catfish. But okay.
The catfish.
Okay,
the creepy catfish.
Yeah. All right, go on.
But it's kind of a long story. But to shorten it, we were roommates for a little bit. She's super hot, just smoking hot. We were hooking up for a little bit, turning a little more than that. So now we're kind of just seeing each
love?
Other, and it's cool. I wouldn't say I'm in love, but you know, I like the girl. I care about her a lot, but things are progressing.
Nice.
Now, me personally, like, I'm not kind of. I just got out of that almost marriage, so I'm like, fuck relationships. I don't want to be a part of this. I don't want to have to worry about someone else and deal with someone else. You know what I mean? But at the same time, like, it's hard because me and her get along too well, so it's like kind of hard.
Have you talked to Joe Silva about getting you a fight?
No, not yet.
But you're cleared.
Yeah, I'm clear with Workman's Comp, so now I'm just training, and I'm trying to get myself back in shape before... I'm going to wait probably like a month and a half before I try to sign a contract. So that
I saw you online. I mean, no offense. You look good, but a little dad bodish. You have to like...
Yeah. I'm getting rid of that. I'm trying to get rid of that shit.
All right, good.
It happens, man. I guess, like, because... I mean, for me being like a fighter, I'm not really like the healthiest eater at all. Like, I mean, I love fast food. I eat shitty, like, you know what I mean? Like... I'm honestly one of those guys that kind of just, I'm like a Michael Phelps, I guess you could say, of like fighting. Cause like when I fought Njiquani, I trained 3 days a week for that guy. Like I trained kickboxing one day, grappling one day, and then I ran one day. That was my training for, you know what I mean? 2 months to kick that dude's ass. So that's like, if that gives you any understanding of like.
Yeah, but why don't we step it up a little bit and go five, right? Or just you're like, fuck it.
Well, now I'm training every day and like, I'm not working at AAA anymore. I got another job. I went back to electrical work. So when I first started fighting, I was an electrician. So I'm back doing that. So now I'm working. And then like today I like my typical day is I work at 7. I'm off around 5:30. And then I go to the gym after that. And like yesterday, that was my schedule, and I left the gym at like 9, I think.
Mac,
9:30,
any advice for this young?
Went home.
Young
and,
buck?
You know what I mean? Did it how to do.
Man, I don't know, man. It's hard. It's hard trying to pay the bills in Southern California and still fight. You know what I mean? We at this level, you know, like, unless you're headlining and stuff, unless you make a run for it and start talking all kinds of crazy shit and marketing fights with fake beefs with the other fighters and all this stuff, you ain't gonna get paid much, and you gotta pick up other work and stuff. I don't know, man. I think
there's politics like any other sport.
If I had it to do over again, I wouldn't have grinded so hard with the way I trained it. I was so bent on this idea of, man, I cannot go in there unprepared, and that would be horrible and everything. And I think it's hard to find that line. Well,
just trust yourself.
Yeah. And I think if I had it to do over again, I wouldn't have done 6 days a week, twice a day, sparring 3 days a week hard. You know, all that.
But you're
stuff.
A perfectionist.
Yeah. Well, but I had, you know, your body is what's on the line at that point. You know,
now, see, so. Did you ever like get burnt out where it was like it became like more of like a job or a drug? 110%
burnout.
And then like,
and then on top of that,
your concentration.
And then add to that the criticism that you get from like fans and journalists and stuff like that. And the next thing you know, like you're like, man, fuck this. Like I don't even want to be. I went from being a gym rat who loved learning and being into the gym to when I was at Couture's, it was like I would train for a fight. I'd be there every day. I'd be grinding. I hated every minute of it. I'd fight, win, lose, or draw. I was not in the gym again for like a month. I didn't even want to see the inside of the gym. I didn't want to see nobody. I don't want to talk to my friends. Like,
but you're also a different personality. I could see those guys. Those guys are like – not dumb jocks, but those guys are wrestling background wrestlers, and you're more of this like anarchist, vegan, introverted guy that hangs out with chicks that used to be cutters. You know, I've seen some of your ex girlfriends. They have blue hair, and they like.
What you talking fucking, about? You seen some of my ex girlfriends?
I've seen them at like at Legends. They would come
Mr.
and watch you.
No. I didn't have no ex girlfriends.
There was small. Small, had like weird makeup and shit. Like,
look, I appreciate the way you're cultivating this story, but let's make sure, yes, that we set the record straight. I don't have any ex-cutter girlfriends with blue hair. I was with the same chick for like 7 years, and that's the lady that I had my daughter with, and we have not been together for a long time, but. But yeah, my wife, man, I'm a one woman man.
All right, but I can see how you wouldn't fit in with those guys. Those guys,
yeah,
are like,
totally.
They're
I get what
giving
you're
each other like rat tails in the gym and wedgies and like fucking sucking each other off and having blowjob stuff. And you're
and
you're in the corner reading a book about like some about like Nietzsche in the corner,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I hear you,
the philosopher in the corner.
Yeah, I could see like you know he has like a pipe and he's looking down at everybody. I could see why this wasn't you know not
yeah,
a good gym.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, maybe if there was a gym in Silver Lake, you would have loved it or something.
Well, you know, hipsters have their own weird thing that bothers me too. You know what I mean? Because and the reason why is because it's not authentic. We go back to the authenticity thing.
Yeah.
Like if it really is your thing to like have like a beard and these old antique glasses and suspenders and dress like you're in like a mining prospector from the 1850s or something.
Like, you're wearing those high waters.
That's really what you're into. Like then, like okay, fine, but like otherwise you're just kind of following.
No, I
appreciate that's the trend, and that the trend isn't that's, like
that's annoying because they hate my they fucking hate
gangsters.
My comedy though. So they fucking look down at me. They're like, then I go boom boom after each joke, and I'm like, fuck you guys. Sorry that I played a sport in high school and got some tan. I've been in the sun before.
So that's why I never see him at the Don Bar.
The hipsters.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they have that. You know,
we monitor them coming in.
Of course, they're out of here. I'm like, hey, did you get laid before 19? No, you're out. Now.
Why don't you let me in?
It's a good point because she was dead. All right, so now
playing mortician.
Now, Mac. But I do think about becoming a vegan sometime because I'm like I love animals.
He's lying. Don't believe
him. Seriously. But every time I see a vegan, they look unhealthy. You're one of like the three vegans that you, John Fitch. And there's like another vegan.
Alex Caceres.
Alex
Caceres.
Yeah. You guys look healthy. How do
he
I
looked really good in his fight, by the
how
way.
How do I become a vegan and not smell?
Not smell. I don't know. I honestly, man, like for me, all I did was I got rid of like chicken and fish in my diet. That was the last two animal products I was eating still in 2004, 2005. And then I just, I got rid of that. And I don't know.
Do you have to cook your own food, though?
Huh?
Yeah,
since 2005, yeah.
But do you cook your own food?
Yeah, I do. I mean, when I had the money, I would go eat out, and there's a ton of vegan restaurants in L.A. and stuff, and there's all kinds of good stuff. But, yeah, I cook my own food. What I stopped worrying about was this whole protein thing. That's the main thing that everybody's like, well, where do you get your protein? How do you possibly do it? Your protein. It's like, you worry about your protein, motherfucker. Like I honestly, like protein is the last thing I think about. Like, right. I don't think that we absorb as much protein as we're told to take in. You know, I feel like then your body just ends up having to convert that to glucose anyways, and you end up taxing your liver because
so you don't eat protein. It's all
I was using like this supplement called Vega for a little while, and it is good. It's like a vegan protein supplement, but it's like that was only when I was grinding really hard and training like, you know, 6 hours, 5 hours a day and stuff like that. I just eat what I want to eat. You know what I mean?
Do you miss taste at all or no?
No, that's a big misconception, man.
Yeah, Mrs. Dash.
Think about all the stuff that I mean, there's so many things you can eat. I'm not even worried about that. What have I eliminated? I mean, it's just meat. You know what I mean? I'm not. There's tons of good stuff to eat, man.
But you obviously eat like. Do you eat like the fake meat and stuff? I mean, not so much.
That stuff, I do mess with it every now and then, but for the most part, that stuff's processed food and it's kind of unhealthy. And it's kind of like targeted for these people who want to make the transition but aren't really sure and they want to dip their toe in the water. And, you know, I want to
don't know any better.
The problem with that stuff is it's never going to taste like the meat. You know what I mean? So, like, why fake it? Just go the opposite. You know, like,
it's like going from vagina to ass. Like, I'm giving up vagina. I'm just going to eat ass. It's never going to taste like.
Right? You've been talking to Jason Andors.
Now let's talk about the fights that happened Saturday night. The Clay Guida. Is it Guida or Guida?
It's Guida.
Guida. Clay Guida.
Like Guido, but
like
in
Guido. Yeah.
Which one? Like the one backstage or the one in the cage?
Let's talk about the one in the cage. He won the first round against Ortega.
He won all three rounds till he got knocked out.
You think
the
he would have won the fight if he hadn't been?
Hell yeah.
Really?
I don't think he won all three rounds. He definitely, I would give him the first round for sure.
Yeah.
I think Ortega started picking apart. I'm going to say at least halfway through the second round, and then he started taking advantage of Guida.
I think the Clay Guida that fought Mac Danzig, if he fights Brian Ortega now, wins that fight. It's just a matter of you just can't have that style forever.
But you know what? I think, I mean, in all honesty, I think Guida looked really good in this fight anyway.
Looked great.
Yeah, I mean, he dropped Ortega in the first round with like a fake low, and then he went high with the left hook, and he dropped him. And Guida, it seemed like he was there to like throw, not just move around and bounce around like he has been doing like in recent fights. And I thought he looked really good.
He did look really good. Now there's a rumor that has been confirmed to me that the Guida brothers jumped Nate Diaz backstage, and then the Diaz brothers
that night.
Yeah. But then they came back and it was a fucking melee. Do you know all the information?
I don't know all the information. I heard from one of the Guida brothers, which I only think there's two. So
yeah.
50-50 shot.
Jason.
I heard from one of the Guida brothers that it was bullshit later on that night, but then I'm hearing conflicting stories from, you know, UFC officials, and they had to hide the Guida brothers because the Diaz crew is insane.
I can say this, Jason. I like Jason, but Jason he'll start problems with anybody. I mean, like, if he has like a third cousin and somebody like brushes in up against their shoulder the wrong way, he's ready to fight. He's kind of like
one
that
of those
type
guys,
of guy.
Huh?
Yeah, yeah.
Which is funny because he didn't fight at all in the octagon. When he came to fight, he didn't make weight. Or
yeah, I was going to say Ultimate Fighter, he didn't make weight, and he's walking through the hotel, and I'm like, he's a fucking monster of a man, but he's fat. And he's, as he walks in from the Guida fight, Guida had been checked out, they come back to the hotel, and he's walking in chewing, and I'm like, of course.
He's the worst kind of guy at a bar because he's stronger than anybody at the bar. You know, but he's not good enough to go, you know what, I don't need to be fighting right now.
He's not humble enough to
I
not
don't
be
wanna,
an asshole.
Yeah, I don't want to break my hand. I don't want to not fight. I could really hurt somebody. He's like in that weird space where he's, you know, too tough, tougher than everybody. He'll fuck anybody up at the bar pretty much. But the guys like you or you, you guys aren't going to throw down because you're like, fuck, I have a career. I don't really want to kill somebody.
I'm not like that. I mean, I've been in scuffles, but never like, I mean, I usually walk away.
Once you became a pro, it was over, right? You didn't want to fight people.
Yeah, I typically don't. I'll walk away from it. I mean, if someone like gets a little outrageous about it and they like come after me, I mean, I'll throw them on the ground, rub their face all over the floor and like mess with them. I'll just embarrass them bad. But you know what I mean? I'm not gonna start fights and just start rumbling like a savage.
It's like Jason. I it's crazy. So I was, you know, based on that fight though, I think that Clay has a couple more fights in him. You know, if he would have went out and just got smoked and looked terrible, but based on that performance, I think Clay's because that Ortega kid is a prospect and a half.
Yeah, he is. He's really good. He's a super technical guy. And
have you ever trained with him?
He was a no, I haven't, but. You could see in his fights, like he's a slow starter, but you could see his technique starting to come out. And he's nice and relaxed. He doesn't get too worried with stuff. Like he's gonna go far.
I'll tell you, the fight that was the hardest for me to watch was the Hector Lombard Henderson fight. First of all, Dana White gave me amazing tickets, so I'm sitting there with all Hendo's family. So it's me and like. And all he has like seven kids. I'm not sure if they were like cousins or nephews, but they're children. I mean, a couple of them are like, you know, 15, 16, 17, but they're young kids. So while Hendo's fighting, one of the kids is crying, you know, because Hendo's getting punched in the face, which if you see your father getting punched.
Don't bring your kids to the fight, man.
And he never does he? Like,
I don't know.
First time he's ever brought him.
I'm not sure. He's never brought him to that before. But like, I don't want my kid watching my fight.
No.
If everything goes well, then she can watch it if she wants. But luckily, my kid's not even interested in.
How old is your kid?
She's seven.
Right.
But like, I don't like it. That stuff hurts. I mean, like, my wife's a fighter, and I corner her, and like, it takes every ounce.
Is she a pro?
Yeah.
What's her name?
Angela Danzig. Yeah.
Angela. Let's blow her up. What's her record?
She just turned pro the other year, last year. So she's 1-1 right now.
1-1, 500. Is she good?
Yeah, she's good. Yeah, she's really good.
What division?
115, yeah. She's at 115, yeah. But what I'm saying is, like, it's really hard for me to be like, okay, like, I'm not getting emotionally involved. Is it the husband watching or is it the coach watching?
Yeah.
You know, I can have, like, a guy that I train that I care a lot about as a person and maybe even friends with, and I watch him get wrecked. And it hurts a little bit, but it's like, it's okay. I know what it's like to get wrecked in the fight. I know that's the name of the game.
Shit happens.
Yeah, it's okay. But, like, if it happens to my wife, like, I'm just like... Oh, dude! You know what I mean? It's really hard to separate.
Yeah,
that
and
stuff.
At home you could change the channel. You know, right. if like you're with your daughter or the kid, and the dad's getting fucked up, let's go watch SpongeBob or something. Yeah. You're there, there's nowhere for the kid to go.
And there's just the way they film these people, though, too. Like, you know, like you watching Miguel Cotto's wife freak out because he's losing the fight, or like Pacquiao's wife is flipping out, and it's like. Like, let them watch it in the back or something, you know? Don't let this be part of the circus. Like, oh, did you see his wife and she's freaking out? And it's like, man.
So that's what happened.
That's like one of the things, like, years ago when the cyborgs were married to each other. And Nick Diaz armbarred Cyborg for the Strikeforce Welterweight Championship.
Like a road rage
and she
moment,
was sitting in the audience and she's crying and the camera's like, let's pan over to Cyborg and watch her cry.
Yeah.
But it's the same thing as, you know, we had Colleen a few weeks ago. And Colleen said, you know, Josh doesn't corner me. He's not my coach. And you asked, you know, he's in the back because he wants to be kind of not emotionally removed, but he doesn't want to be forefront. And everybody's like, oh, what's Josh think about
this? It's also not about him.
Yeah,
and this
yeah it's about
so,
her.
So, yeah, so the kids are crying. And I'm rooting for Hector, but I can't even root for him because I'm not going to root because I don't want to root against a five-year-old. You know, I'm not going to be like, ha ha, your dad's getting, like, you're getting fucked
up. As they're sitting next to him, I'm going to smash him in the face.
Yeah.
One of us going to whip his ass.
So now I can't even root. I have to, like, silently root for Hector Lombard, you know? Because I know Hector. I know Dan, too, but Hector's a friend of the show, and he's actually a good friend of mine. And he texts me, like,
oh,
I love
I see
you,
the
man.
Biased opinion.
So, yeah, of course I'm biased. So if you were fighting, it'd be the same thing. So, actually, I'm more friends with you than Hector, but regardless. So Hector, so the first round, he almost stops Dan Henderson, right?
Oh, I mean,
he got rocked first. But I look at Bubba in the second round, and I'm like, why is he not moving his head, right? And granted, Mac, you know, like, I'm one of the guys on Twitter. I'm like, obviously, I'm not going to say weren't moving your head at fucking Hector Lombard. But I'm like, why is he? I'm like, what would you tell him right now? He would, like, I would say, don't stand there and trade with Dan Henderson. This is the only way this guy can beat you is by landing a punch. And Hector, I don't know if he was gassed, if he just doesn't respect. He didn't respect it. We thought he was better, but yeah,
you never know in a fight like that. Sometimes your emotions get the best of you. He could have, like, because he hurt Henderson bad in that first round. He could have just got excited, but like, oh, I'm going to finish him, and blew his wad. And Lombard's a big
what
dude.
What was that at?
185.
185.
Yeah, and he's a big dude for that weight class.
And Hector,
still.
If I was Hector, I'd only fight one round from now on. I would say, listen, I will fight anybody.
You're like, Brony, I'll never lose the first round.
Seriously. I mean, at last, if he fought one round, he would have beaten Neil Magny. And he would have beaten Dan Henderson, because in that first round, he is so dangerous. But that second and third round, he just, I don't know what happens. He gets complacent, or he gets tired.
Maybe he got a little gun shy because Hendo did hit him, rock him, and it's like, you know, when's the last time you've seen Hector get rocked on the feet?
No, he
to
got
the point
rocked,
where,
but
like,
then he went right to his judo, hit that beautiful toss.
Yeah. And, but then he wasn't moving. He was just sitting in side control and throwing little elbows, but like,
but
trying
when he,
to.
When he was lying there in the middle of the cage and everyone celebrating, and the whole place was yelling, Hendo, Hendo, which I
they also
understand.
Meant USA, and I'm like,
yeah, fuck that.
I hate when people, I hate that whole thing, but Hector was out for like 3 to 5 minutes.
While they were doing
minutes.
That, I was yelling USA.
Yeah, I was actually trying to look at a lumbar to make sure he was like still alive because he was on the ground
while
for
people
a
were
while.
Saying USA, I was like DA. Like Usada, but I was
TRT TRT.
I was completely rooting for Hector, and then I called him that night. You know, I actually spoke to him, and he was like, he thought that, you know, that those elbows were a little bit to the side, to the back of his head. That those were behind. And
you
if
mean
you
the second ones are the one that knocked him out.
If you look at them, they were very close to the back of the head.
The one that knocked him out was straight in the temple. That for sure was a legal shot.
Right here.
The second one where he landed on top of him looked like it was square in the face, and the third one it looked like he might have hit him in the back of the
and
head.
And then what's
who
up
knows?
With Hendo's follow up shots once the guy's laying there? I understand you
those
fight
are bonus shots.
Yeah,
as a fighter, like, I mean, if I get bonus shots, I take them.
Really?
Like, yeah, like. That's kind of like your bonus sometimes.
Mac, what's your opinion on bonus shots?
It depends on where you are at the moment. I did it to Joe Stevenson, but not because I wanted to really hurt him afterwards or anything. It was just because I know some guy might go out and face plant like that, and as soon as he hits the mat, wake up.
Yeah, he wakes himself
up. And if I don't convince the ref to stop the fight, then I'm not doing my job. I got to convince the refs to stop the fight. So I'm going after it. I just got tunnel vision at that moment.
Yeah.
And it, don't get me wrong, if you have clarity at that moment and you clip the person and they're completely done, their eyes roll back to the head and the ref is, you know, a few paces behind, if you can, yeah, just pull back and you don't need to blast them.
I think it would have been cool. I mean, he did that with Bisping, and then afterwards he admitted he did that on purpose to Bisping.
Well, he was
pissed.
Bisping was talking some shit.
And then he did it to Hendo. I mean, he did it to Lombard, and then afterwards tweeted out a picture of him smoking a Cuban cigar with a flag over his thing, which was like, bro,
Hendo did that.
Yeah, Hendo did that. Like,
I didn't see that.
Yeah,
wow.
So I mean, come on, man. Like, come on.
Yeah, but you know what, like. It's. I mean, shit happens. So I'm gonna give you an example. I've been in fights where I've hit dudes and they're out, and I knew they're out, and like I've hit them a couple of times just like Danzig said, to make sure the ref stops it. You know what I mean? Because you'll hit the guy and walk away, and sometimes the ref won't stop it. You know what I mean? The ref
right.
Like sometimes refs just don't know. Like if they can't see their eyes, especially they don't know. But then when I fight Njiquani, I knocked Njiquani out in that fight. I kept hitting him to get those bonus shots. He woke back up and ran, hit the fence, because he had no fucking clue where he was.
Right.
So, like, it backfires, too, sometimes. Like, I woke him back up hitting him, but, you never know.
To me, as a fan, and in a perfect world, a guy's out, and then, you know, you whatever. At the same time, I understand you fight till the ref stops the fight. That's how you train. And sometimes refs don't stop the fight. And there have been times where I've seen guys, when I remember when
honestly, you can't trust the refs sometimes.
I remember when Jay Haran dropped Ben Askren. He puts his hands up to celebrate, and that cost him the fight, in my opinion. So, at the same time, I think you should probably finish. I don't know. It's a slippery slope, as they say.
It's all situational. Sometimes you got to do what you got to do, and sometimes you just mark hunt and walk away like a boss.
And right. I'm not defending Hendo at all, but they're... I'm sure you guys all know there was some bad blood going into that fight because Hector said he went to train at Team Quest.
Yeah, it's called
Colt their blood. No. He said he went to train at Team Quest years ago, and Hendo wouldn't give him the time of day. So there was bad blood going into it, and Hector's like, I'm going to fuck him up. And, you know, I'm not, like I said, I'm not defending Hendo, but there was, I guess, extenuating circumstances. Just like when Rampage fought Vanderlei in the UFC, and he landed like three huge bombs after he was clearly out. It's just, you know, You got to be in there.
Circumstances you just don't know that are behind the scenes.
Yeah, I know. And you know, it's not like the ref can major. You know, just says voila, and all of a sudden you guys are best friends. You guys are fighting each other.
Yeah.
So Mac Dancic has to leave. Yeah. Mac, it was an honor to have you.
Thanks.
It was great seeing you, man. Can we get a quick picture before you leave?
Yes, of course.
Whose phone is that, by the way?
Mine. This guy. So,
see the shirt?
No.
You haven't seen the tattoos.
He has five Conor McGregor tattoos, by the way.
Vince is now going to hate me.
This is the biggest.
He does not have five Conor McGregor tattoos.
I swear to God, he does.
I do. I'm working on a sixth.
Do you want to see Matt? Want to see him?
You guys are joking.
No.
Like the.
No. He's the biggest fan.
I got ex-girlfriend.
No, he's the biggest fan. There's one.
Wow. Okay.
This is going to be on the podcast. Two, yes.
Okay.
Three.
What happened when
Hold on. We're going to have this on the podcast. Mac, can you talk into the microphone? Showed Mac the five McGregor tattoos.
So
I got your hat, Vince, on my foot.
Oh, nice.
Oh, yeah.
So what happened when he lost to Nate? Was that like devastating? Or
me and Luke Skywalker were hanging out at the top of the mountain together.
No, really. No, answer the question for real.
I took off my Conor fight kit, threw it in my room, and stared at a cable box for about 25 minutes silently with my friends just watching me, waiting for me to blow up and kill somebody. But luckily, there were no murders that night.
Yeah, you know, he's the biggest UFC fan I think I know. He loves mixed martial arts like nobody else. The guy knows everything. I personally think he should stop getting five. Five is enough. He wants to get one more.
Yeah, but I have two. I have two Brock Lesnar.
I'm gonna steal this mic because I want to hold this fucker up.
Take care, Mac. Right, yo, great seeing you, man. Thank you.
Brock Lesnar tattoos.
Really?
Yeah, I have a Wanderlei Silva tattoo. I have two Miracle Krokop tattoos. I have a lot.
A Chuck Liddell also.
I have a new Chuck Liddell that I got about 2 weeks ago.
I'm just going to say, like, I'm never that kind of person that would ever get a tattoo like that or, like, a girl's name or some shit like that, but that's cool. I don't think in any way that you're, like a stage five or anything. I think that's kind of cool.
It's all right.
It's your own body. It's your body art. It's what you like. It, you know, it's what you love. You put yourself.
Matt Schnell called me a homo on the podcast like a couple months ago. Matt Schnell.
Danger.
And then I saw him in Vegas for fight night because he was there with ATT. And we were laughing about it.
But now, what are your two Brock Lesnar tattoos?
I have, you know, the skulls with the chain coming down that he, with the swords going through him that he wore in his Death Clutch shorts. It's basically the logo for Death Clutch.
No idea, but okay.
Me either.
Okay.
All right. Well, I'll pull them up right now.
All
right.
So
it must be in a private spot.
No, they're right. They're on my back.
Now, what's the sixth McGregor tattoo you're getting?
Probably the gorilla that he has right here. I'm going to get it on the side of my leg.
All
right.
It's badass.
But it's going to look a lot better than his.
So
it's
going to
look a lot better
have?
Than his because...
I have zero tattoos.
Yeah, zero tattoos.
It's going to look better because my artist is better.
Now, okay, so we're going to talk about the co-main event, which was Uriah Faber versus Dominick Cruz.
Oh, yeah. Cruz, baby. Team Cruz.
I know that you're Team Cruz. I'll tell you what. Oh, you know, nice. Being there...
That's pretty tough.
I thought that Uriah won the first round. I thought that Dominick looked tired. This was the most tired I have ever seen Dominick Cruz. His mouth was open. His mouth guard. I was like, man, this might be the night. This might be Uriah's night. And then Dominick dropped him in the second and then took over the fight from there. Had he not dropped him, maybe that fight would have gone a different way. But, you know, like my dad says, if my aunt had wheels, she'd be a car. But, it was an interesting fight.
I thought that was a really good fight. Cruz did look a little tired in that first round, but he was trying to wrestle the shit out of Faber. I think he was trying to throw Faber off and kind of wear him out a little bit. And I think that really threw Faber off big time, too, because I know Faber wasn't expecting that. He's expecting him to dance around, throw punches. And I know Faber didn't really respect his power too much.
You don't think Uriah was trying to wrestle Dominick?
No, that was all Dominick. Dominick instigated that wrestling in that first round.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Faber did wrestle back, but that was... In my eyes, Dominick instigated that whole wrestling exchange in that first round. And I do feel that first round could have went either way.
I thought Uriah won that first round. I don't know. But at the same time, I was looking to give it to Cruz. I'm like, oh, this is going to be, you know, Uriah was doing a lot better than I thought he was going to do in that first round. And then it felt like Uriah was on kind of not on Queer Street, but that his equilibrium was off or something.
I think when he dropped him with that left in the second round, I think that really threw him off. I just don't think he gained all his marbles back and really like got his whereabouts about him and could back into his groove. Because Faber's actually a really tough fighter. He's been there. He's been everywhere. And he's fought everyone and beat everyone. You know, basically there is a beat besides the champs. And I think that just got to him, got in his head a little bit. And then, you know, Dominic's a workhorse. Like, that dude in the gym, he's like the first one there, last one to leave. Like, he's always working on his own. And I honestly, in that first round, I thought he looked a little tired too. But I know Dominic, like, I know his game plan and how he trains. Like, he always resets himself. So I knew that was going to happen, and eventually he would start steamrolling, because that's how he is.
I was annoyed because, like, I was right where everybody walked out. Like, I literally was, like, giving, like, fist pumps people as they were walking, which I was like, oh, this is the coolest job ever. I would actually get paid for this. This would be a great job to show up to, like, piss some people while they're going to a fight. But Cody No Love was waiting for Cruz to walk out. Like, right, like, he had to look at him so he can talk shit as he walked. And then they announced the first time of the night they're going to walk through the other entrance. I was like, oh, man. now
just waiting to see what happens.
Yeah, but didn't shit still happen?
I heard that Cody No Love and Uriah got into, and then Cruz got into it backstage. That's what I heard.
Those two got into it?
Yeah. But
Faber had nothing but good words for him after the fight. You know what I mean? Faber wasn't even talking about his fight. He was just talking about how much he
I know that Cody really wants Cruz, and that's a very tough fight for Cruz, I think, because if you go... I mean, Cruz's whole thing is foot speed. Not his whole thing, but one of his main things is foot speed, the way he controls you, how he's not there to be hit. You can't hit him because you can't see him. And then you got a guy like Cody No Love, who I believe was 30-1 as an amateur boxer and has better hands than Dominic, I would assume. And has
strong. He's
and
got
has
more power.
Just as good at wrestling, not good at MMA wrestling. Submissions, I would give it to Cruz. But I don't know. It's an interesting fight.
I think in that fight, Cruz would take that fight. No, Cody's a really good boxer, and he's super aggressive. He comes at people, but he comes at people a little stupid sometimes with his hands low, just kind of throwing punches. Like, he doesn't really stick to his technique like he should. And I think, like, Cruz exploits that out of people. He gets people to do that, walk in on him, and then he lands bombs on him. Like, that's how Cruz's fighting style is. He's super elusive. He's hard to hit.
I also was at the Garbrandt Almeida fight, and I agree with you wholeheartedly, being so close and watching it. Garbrandt was throwing crazy shots, but at the same time, he wasn't protecting himself. So I'm like, okay, Tomas has to throw one good hook, maybe. And he's got a good chin, but like you said, he comes in wild. He's throwing heavy shots. Dominic's waiting for it. He moves so quick. He's never in the same position for more than like half a second. So people were saying, you know, right after the Garbrandt fight, well, how would he do against Cruz? Well, yeah, he has power, but can he hit him? And we've seen TJ, who has power and has the footwork and everything, and he could barely hit him. I think Cruz is like the anti-alpha male. it's just the way it is.
I think he's that whole team's Achilles heel. Or heel.
Yeah. Now, the main event, Bisbing versus Rockhold. So I'm watching this fight.
So happy for Bisbing.
And I was so happy for Bisbing. And I was
not
secretly rooting for Bisbing because I felt for the guy. Number one, you know, almost all his losses are to guys who were on something. Even the guys he beat were on something. He fights Vitor Belfort, who's TRT'd out of his mind, and now his eye is looking in a different direction every day.
Yeah, and his eye is always red. It's constantly watering, and he still goes out there and fights and trains every day. Like,
and the guy, I'm watching
dedicated.
That fight, and it looked like, you know, Rockhold was treating it as an amateur sparring session.
Yeah,
and
I felt that same too.
And I go to Bubba, and I'm like, he is not respecting this dude's power at all. And Bubba was like, oh, like everyone, like basically common idea was he doesn't have to. But it just shows you, I mean, he did overcommit to it, and then boom.
Yeah, Rockhold's a beast, and I honestly, like, I was rooting for Bisbing, but I in my deep down, I thought Rockhold was just going to walk away with it, like, no problem, because that dude is a super huge, he's super long, he's a southpaw, which is super hard for people to deal with a lot of times, and, like, just his technique, like, Rockhold is a monster, but Bisbing is, like, not a guy you should ever count out. Like, he has punching power, and I think he got in Rockhold's head a little bit, talking about Destiny and, like, talking shit at the pressers and stuff like that, but I felt the same. Like, Rocco wasn't really taking the fight seriously. He looked like he was just in there sparring, like, oh, whatever. Like, eventually you're just going to go down, so it's whatever. As soon as I land a shot, whatever, I'm going to take you out.
It looked like he was annoyed he had to be there. but his, you know, what's crazy is his arrogance is what makes him so great, but it's also...
It's his downfall.
What was his downfall. And I think that you could put McGregor in that category. There's a lot of guys you could put in that category. What makes him so great is their belief in that they could beat anybody, which they... 99% of the time can. In the rematch, I would still think Rockhold would be the favorite. But
it's a rubber match at that point.
Yeah. Well,
and I thought,
yeah, because now it's 1-1.
Now, as far as as far as Bisping after the fight, after he knocked him down and then says, "Do you know where you are?" and just being a complete dick. Come on. I mean, you knocked the guy out. You got the belt.
Honestly, knowing Bisping, that wasn't even that bad. Like he could have been so much more of an asshole. And he said he wanted to, but he wasn't. That wasn't too bad.
Like when he spit on George Rivera's cornerman after beating him. Yeah, that was classy. I think and Rockhold made a good point when he said, when I beat you, I came over, made sure you were okay. I shook your hand. I helped you up. Whatever. And Bisping goes in there and does that. And in terms of Rockhold fighting, with a lefty versus the righty, I was expecting Rockhold to throw heavy back body kicks, like hit him in the
like
body,
he always does,
go
that
for
kick
it more.
Is he ruins people with that body?
He
kick.
He didn't seem like he wanted to be there. The fans didn't see him all week. I was at the hotel all week.
Yeah,
he wasn't staying there.
Right? What was your
issue? Rockhold. Didn't see him all week. He wasn't staying at the Fighter Hotel. He was at a mansion somewhere nearby. The only one I saw
Damn,
fight week.
A fun Kardashian now, huh?
Yeah.
Well, I think he was hanging out with Lazy the Savage and a few other people. I think Kane might have been there for a little bit. The only one I saw at the hotel was DC, that was part of the AKA crew, and Javier Mendez. But
was he at the buffet?
Javi?
No, DC and Javier.
I don't think they have a buffet at the Manhattan Beach Marriott.
What is that, chicken cake?
Oh, yeah, all about that cake. Yeah, that was the one I made. Now what was your issue with Bisping?
All right, well, let's first off remove my issue.
Okay.
I mean, yes, I'm the one speaking from the fan standpoint.
From the graphers?
But, no, not just...
Okay,
you're seriously going to make this, like, I've already been taking
you're
shit.
Pissing him off.
I've seriously been taking shit for days of guys like, oh, because CB thinks he's an asshole, he's now an asshole. No, I'm representing all the fans, the graphers, the regular fans, the casual fans. If you weren't in Bisping's close circle, fight week, which I was at the hotel Wednesday through Saturday.
Now, you got a room at the hotel?
No. I stayed at home.
You stayed at home?
It's in Manhattan Beach. It was like 40 minutes away
so
in the morning.
You drove to the hotel in the morning?
I drove to the hotel every morning, and I came home at night, except for the fight, when I came home before it started, and then left right after it ended.
So you're in the hotel waiting to get an autograph?
I was just hanging out in the hotel.
Okay. All right.
So, every sentence that comes out of your mouth is like more catering this to my opinion. This
All
is
right.
I'm representing the entire fan base, and I know I'm going to take shit for it, but whatever.
Okay.
The entire week, Bisping was not very friendly. He was yelling at fans, telling them, I've signed 20, 30 things for you, when they had never even came up to him yet. I spoke to him a couple times, and let me tell the fans this. I wanted Bisping to win until he acted the way he did fight week. I have never been a Rockhold fan, but I have never wanted Rockhold to win. Side note, I am now cool with Demetrius Johnson, so all you right. can leave me alone about that.
Okay.
So Bisping was not nice to the fans. When people asked him for a photo, he was just kind of like, again, like, this is your 500th photo. I was trying to talk to him about the show. He wouldn't give me the time of day. He told me I have things to do and walked away. When I'm holding the belt in my hands, trying to tell him, like, I know you're a fan. I know you know Adam, this and that, whatever. Wouldn't give me the time of day. Wouldn't give my friends the time of day. Other fans, not even talking to him. And, I tried to give him the benefit of the doubt until he yelled at me on two different days. And then I'm like, okay, well, whatever.
What
He's
happened?
Preparing for fight week. One was with an autograph for me and a couple friends, and the other was for a photograph, and he just stormed and yelled at me to my face and walked off.
And what days were these? Were these like the beginning of the week, or was it mid or after?
It was
walking to the octagon.
It was Thursday and Friday.
Okay.
Thursday was for an autograph that I had told him previously I was getting for a friend from upstate.
Now, I understand why he was an asshole to you. Do you know what it's like to cut fucking 30, 40 pounds and people like swarm you and you know what I mean? Like not stop getting bombarded? Like,
no, I get it. I get it. And like I've been doing this for many, many years, and I've actually had you sign a few things fight week before, Vegas, whatever. I understand, and on weigh-in day,
it was when his car broke down, and you were fixing it.
jump-starting him.
On weigh-in day, I leave him alone until after the weigh-ins, after they've rehydrated, that kind of thing. So the Friday thing was after that, but
Are
I was trying
by the water fountain. All right, okay, go on. All right, go on.
I wish this
He's
was
cutting off the water so he gets his autograph.
I wish this was Periscope so I could like walk out right now.
Just one more, come on.
So I gave him the benefit of the doubt. I had voiced my opinion and said he's not being very friendly, but He's trying to give him the benefit of the doubt. He's cutting. He's getting ready.
What do you mean? So on my Twitter, you put, you're not being friendly?
Yeah, it was on Twitter. It was on Facebook.
So you put, guys, Bisping's not being friendly.
No, I was just, people were asking me what's been going on, and I tweeted out that everybody's cool, except he's not being nice. So, like I said, I tried to give him the benefit of the doubt. After he won the belt, I headed back to the hotel to hang out. I wanted one photo with him with the MMA Roasted belt, because I know he's a fan of the show.
Right.
And Jason Perillo, who's his boxing coach, I've spoken to before, always nice to me, no issues. And so I went up to him, and he was partying, he was drinking already, and he turned down at least 12 or 15 of us, not just graphers, fans in general that were at the hotel, giving him standing ovations when he walked in, congratulations, all these things. I said, can I take a photo with you? Yeah, he took it, and then he goes, this is your fucking 500th photo of the week, can't I just have a beer? And so I just kind of was like, whatever, I'll walk away.
Right.
But I've never had that type of interaction with a fighter, and I have met Bisping and graphed him before many times, at least half a dozen times. Never had an issue like that before. They've been on Fight Week, they've been without Fight Week, because I was doing different things, and I'm trying to promote the show that I love with all my heart.
I love you, CB. You're the best, but you don't have to, you don't have to promote the show. I'm just trying, I love you, but no, I love you, but I just don't want guys being like, who the fuck, like getting mad, then you're promoting the show. But if you want to go to grassroots,
I'm not.
Don't worry about the show. It's totally cool.
No, the promoting is just, the promoting is not telling them about the show, unless it's like a Demetrius, when I was like, yeah, we have the show. He's like, oh yeah, I've heard of it, whatever.
No.
But with Bisping, I'm not like, hey, do you know about our show? You got to come on. It was just, can I get a picture with the belt? And then I put the belt up with the certain fighter, so people go, oh wait, that's Michael Bisping. Oh wait, what's that belt? Oh, what's MMA Roast? I'm not like talking to him about it.
Right now,
I this is one of the reasons I didn't want to come in today, but
why?
Because I didn't want to get into this, because this is the whole thing. This is the whole thing that's going to make me look like an asshole when I'm trying to do things for other people.
I'm just trying to give you. You don't have to do anything for us. No,
I understand that. But the Twitter reaction to this segment of the podcast is going to be all directed at me and people talking.
You don't know that.
Oh, I know that.
Okay. Listen.
I've already taken almost 100 tweets because of this.
What? Okay. All right. Okay. We have Sean Jacoby, who is the head of American Icon Autographs, who has an autograph store, and he sponsors how many fighters? 30 fighters.
Oh, is that what Matt's signing for you?
He has all kinds of Invicta fighters. This guy, when it comes to MMA, is one of the biggest sponsors and nicest guys I know. So he wants to talk about, he was here with Mac Danzig. He wants to weigh in on this topic.
All right, I was there. I saw what CB was doing. Like, he was being a good fan.
Okay.
Like, legitimately, like, respectful to the fighters. He would ask periodically for an autograph. He loves getting pictures with the dudes. Like, what CB's doing is good for business.
Right.
You know, like, he's making your show look good.
Okay.
Legitimately, like, I could tell you that. Like, it's
upset. All right.
Literally want to cry.
No, like, he's honestly.
I'm having a hard time because I know the backlash that I'm going to get from this, and that's not what I aim for. I'm trying to be the proponent for this show, and I love this show, and you know I love this show.
You're the only one. Look, you're the only guy. Aside from me, you're the only person helping the show.
But being honest on the show,
I appreciate that. I just don't want fighters getting fucking pissed off, and you're going, well, I was just trying to promote the show.
But that's not what I'm doing.
Okay.
No, for sure, that's not what he's doing. Like, there might be one guy, Michael Bisping, who said something negative. But the other 30 fighters...
Just a champion.
The other 30 fighters, like what CB's doing and appreciate, like, how big of a fan he is. And when he mentions your show, they smile.
Of course they do, because they love the show and they love CB. He's a great fan. Yeah. Stop getting fucking upset.
Of course I'm upset, because I knew this was going to fucking happen.
Well, stop being upset.
I'm going to take a backlash on Twitter that's not going to be directed at you, and it just...
With a grass match.
Listen to me. Listen. Look, I believe you're a huge asset to the podcast. You know more about MMA than any
huge
of us.
Ass is more like,
okay,
you.
You're an ass too, okay? but listen, you were getting autographs for fucking 20 years before the fucking podcast.
I feel like I'm in an intervention.
Okay, you've been doing this for a long ass time.
I stopped autographing in 2013, though. I just started back just so I could have a collection for my own.
Okay, that's so not... that's something you enjoy to do. Some people, okay, they enjoy watching porn.
But
okay,
I don't tell them people... I'm part of the podcast when I ask for the autograph.
If you want to, go ahead.
I bring the belt up and that's
fuck,
it.
Okay, I don't... Look,
and now
I,
I'm getting yelled at by Adam.
No, you're not getting
again.
Yelled at. If you want to give him... If you, look, go ahead. Tell him whatever the fuck you want. You're actually... I think you're helping. If Bisping wants to be... Look, he's probably cutting weight. He's frustrated. He's nervous. He doesn't want to get his fucking ass kicked. He's fighting Luke Rockhold. He got choked out in fucking 2 rounds. He's probably kind of a dick to some of the fans. And I understand why. But I also understand... Listen, the fans are the ones paying the fucking... You know, to see you. So I understand both points of view. Okay? If you want to get people's autographs and that's what makes you happy, do it. Okay? You're going to do it anyway. The fuck you need, what the fuck you care what I think?
I'm going to say similar but kind of the same thing. If you're doing something that makes you happy, who gives a shit what other people think or say? You know what I mean? Like, if it makes you happy, that's
But you
all
can't
that
have
matters.
Both ways. You can't say, I'm CB. This is my fucking, I'm on the podcast.
I don't though
okay,
anymore.
But you can't say, I'm. This is what I talk about, and anyone could, and then get mad at people coming at you. I either block them, okay, which is what I do. If you don't like my jokes,
I
block them.
I don't want to fucking, I don't want to be like that, and I'm not here to bash Bisping. Like, I'm not here to say he's an asshole. I'm just telling the fans from a first-person eyewitness perspective what was going on Fight Week. And before this podcast, all weekend, oh, well, CB says he's an asshole, but CB's the only one. I'm like, no, I was there.
Yeah, okay, but you can't have it both ways. You can't say, look, guys... Listen to what the fuck I want to look what I have to say, and then get mad and people respond.
No, but it's the way that it's presented on this podcast is my issue.
Okay,
I think you see it as like comedy, and I don't see
this
it
is
as the comedy
podcast.
I don't see it as comedy.
Well, you want to have the CB graphing series?
No. I'm not talking about that. But like, I have. Never mind.
The fact that I
gotta leave in a few minutes anyways.
Oh, okay. Everyone's mad at me. This is my
I'm
fault.
Not mad at you. Mad I'm getting ready for your show so I can go feed my dog so I can bring my parents to come see you perform that I hype you to everybody I fucking
I know. And I
appreciate
I separate
the two. Trust me.
Okay, all right.
We had this conversation Saturday night.
All right, what do we talk? Let's talk about Ariel Helwani.
He's fucking back, and that means I can't have his job, so I'm pissed.
No, you were right there. Listen.
Thanks, Adam.
Look,
Ariel. Bye, guys.
All right, Ariel Helwani, as you guys know, what happened with Ariel Helwani this week, where Ariel Helwani leaked the Brock information before they wanted to, then got escorted out, then went on the MMA Hour, broke down, started crying, and then now he's unbanned. I have a couple thoughts about this. Number one, according to Joe Rogan, okay, what he... And he wasn't 100% on it, but he basically, it was presented to them that, like, don't leak this information or people might get fired, and Ariel did it anyway.
Yeah, the UFC, if they have something like that out, and, I mean, anything, and if they have something that they're going to put out and you know about it, the first thing they're going to tell you is, don't put that out before we do.
And you know what? Ariel works for the UFC. And that's the problem that I have with every, look, I like Ariel, okay, even though he doesn't necessarily like me, okay, because I said he looks like Toucan Sam or something, or I made a joke about him being Gargamel from the Smurfs. He got upset about that, but now we're cool, I guess. I don't want to see anyone lose their job. From a person who's lost many jobs, almost every job I've ever had, okay, it sucks. And he's got a family. Yeah. I think he's got two kids. You don't want to see anyone lose their job, okay? At the same time, this is not the case of a reporter reporting and losing a job. He's working for the UFC. When you work for a private company, you can't just go rogue and do your own shit. And that's sort of what he did. And it's a situation where he is a reporter, but he's still kind of on salary. And that's what I think is the case. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. Some people say he's not working for the UFC. Other people say he is. He says his checks are signed by Zuffa. So if
you know what though,
Zuffa, you gotta be.
In my eyes, it doesn't matter to me if he's working for the UFC or not. On top of MMA fighting, if the UFC for sure, I know, told him don't release this before we do. He released it. He knew what he was doing, and you know what I mean. It happened. Me personally, do I think they're going to ban him for life? No, I'm sure they were going to ban him for, you know what I mean, the certain amount of time just to teach him a lesson to let him know that they're serious, and you know what I mean, like. when we told you not to release this before we did, like, we were serious and you did it, so we're going to ban you. You know what I mean? Like, I understand it, but I don't feel like they were going to ban him for life. I think that's a little drastic for them to do.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I just felt like, me personally, he shouldn't have done it. Like, he should have just waited and you know what I mean, posted it, you know, simultaneously or seconds later. You know what I mean? It's not that big of a deal. Like, what does it matter, if, you know what I mean, to him? Like, is it really that big of a deal that he wants to be the first person to put that out? Or could he have waited a few seconds?
I mean,
it's a stupid situation. It's kind of...
Dude, that's 100% a big deal in his business. Like, that's a big thing. If he can make that announcement before the UFC does, that's a big scoop. That's like a big thing for him.
Is that we're sacrificing his main...
But he's working for the UFC.
Yeah, that's the conflict here, for sure.
Yeah, if he was just a rogue reporter, I'd say absolutely fucking report.
Yeah.
Okay, but if you're...
What's his main reporting? It's UFC. Like, he knew better.
But if you're getting a check from the UFC, you can't... Then have it both ways.
Didn't he claim that, like, he's, even though he's getting his check from Zuffa, he still doesn't necessarily work for Zuffa? Like,
well, then give those checks to somebody else then.
I hear what you're saying, like, and you're right, but
CB.
Yeah, but still, regardless, if Zuffa's paying him or not,
come on, you're really upset about this?
They told him for sure, don't release this before we do. He did, and that's what happened.
I haven't heard that, and if that's the case, he's wrong.
That happens with everyone. Like, I mean, any kind of, like, Ultimate Fighter guys, we're all told not to release any kind of information. You know what I mean? Otherwise, you're in some kind of lawsuit. UFC is like, if you release information, you're in a lawsuit. Like, we hope you got millions of dollars to pay us for this lawsuit because we're going to sue the shit out of you. That's how they are. You know what I mean? Like, they want to be the ones to release it because it's their information.
Should he have gotten fired? No. Should he got thrown out? No. At the same time, it's like, if you don't want to take those checks from the UFC, then don't take the then go on your own, and then you can report all you want.
Tell you what, it's been the best thing to happen to the UFC. What most mainstream press they've ever had.
And for him.
Now, yeah, who's talking about all this? No. Like, how many times has ESPN and so many of these mainstream reporters been talking about Brock Lesnar and UFC 200 now? Like, this has blown up the whole event way more than it even could have without him doing this.
Now, that being said, Brock Lesnar fighting Mark Hunt, I mean, this is just a horrible matchup. Like, I mean, I was saying to Dana, I'm like, you guys got to fight a guy. You got to find someone who has no punching power for Brock to fight. And they found the guy with the most punching power for him to fight.
Yeah, but okay, I'm going to say this. That's in striking, that's a really bad matchup for Lesnar. But as far as, like, grappling, Lesnar's a big, huge dude. And if he just bull charges him and spears Hunt to the ground, Lesnar will take advantage of him by all means.
He has two submissions. He has an arm triangle. Actually, he has one submission. He has an arm triangle.
It doesn't matter. Like, Lesnar is, like, over 300 pounds probably when he's fighting. He's a big, big dude. And if he's on top of you, he'll just beat the shit out of you. And Mark Hunt is
Mark Hunt can take a beating and a half.
He can, but when he's on his back and his ass whooped like that, like, no one can... And, you know, every man has his limit. And I think if Lesnar takes him down, like, Lesnar could win the fight easily. But if he can't take Mark Hunt down, Lesnar's in a lot of trouble. I mean, he's going to wake up not knowing what happened.
Yeah, no, I just think it's a bad matchup for Brock. I mean, and do we really want to see this? Do you want to see Brock take 3 years off, get knocked out? I mean, this is what we all want to see. I mean, I don't want to see it. I want to see Brock Lesnar fight. I just don't want to see him fight Mark Hunt. Yeah. I would like to see him fight.
I think they should have gave him a little lower level
of a fight.
But then
who are they going to do? Sean Jordan? I mean, I'm going down the rankings of, like, who are they going to find?
Well, he's a former champ. I would definitely give him a top 10 guy, but, I mean, someone a little more better of a matchup for him. I'd have to dig through names, like, honestly, to give him, like, if I were to pick a fight for him.
CB, who would you have Brock fight?
Frank Mir.
Can't. He popped, tested positive. He's out.
I would like to see that again.
Oh, so would I. It's the rubber match. Carwin's been retired back too, but it's not about getting the best matchup. They brought him in to sell pay-per-views, and Mark Hunt versus Brock Lesnar's gonna sell pay-per-views.
Of course, but yeah. But
that's why he's there,
Adam.
How
do you see this fight ending?
It doesn't matter. They just want the pay-per-view buys.
Brock by ground and pound.
Really?
He's not dumb enough to go in there and fucking swing with Mark Hunt. Nobody's dumb enough to go in there and swing
with
Mark Hunt.
Who's ever ground and pound him
Mark Hunt? I don't think he's that stupid.
Stipe, didn't he?
Stipe didn't ground and pound him.
But look at it this way. You have one of the, and I'm not talking pro wrestling, I'm talking one of the best heavyweight wrestlers that you've ever seen in the UFC. I mean, the first thing that Mike Goldberg said when he fought Mir the first time, how long until Brock goes for a takedown? And he couldn't even finish the sentence. It was 3 seconds in, and he barreled through him, fucking hits Heath Herring at the start of their fight, and then barrels through him. All he has to do is go for the fastest double leg you're ever going to see in an MMA fight, get to mount, and just start fucking pounding him. You think Mark Hunt's going to throw up an arm bar or a bottom arm triangle? He's going to take him down immediately. Brock doesn't like getting hit. He didn't like getting hit in practice. And he's fastest double leg you'll ever see in your life. Passed him out because he'll probably land in either side or half guard. Passed him out and brain on top of it. You're looking at a 310-pound guy that's going to come in and just fucking, yeah, do I think Brock can lose? Yeah, there's a very good possibility he could lose that fight. But he has to shoot immediately, and he's not dumb enough to go in there with the most powerful hands in the heavyweight division, if not the UFC.
He got into a striking match with Overeem.
But also, too, look what happened. But also, Lesnar is a really good wrestler.
Great wrestler.
Especially for his size.
But like Sean McCorkle said, when he fought Mark Hunt, he missed him with an uppercut and it still hurt. The fucking wind hurt him. I mean, I don't know. I just think it's a bad match.
Fastest double leg. Don't even come out there. One of two things. Come out there and shoot as hard as you fucking can as soon as you get near the guy. Or you come out there, pump a couple jabs, thinking Hunt's going to think, you know, what the hell is he doing? And then just fucking grab his legs. You can't tell me that Brock cannot take down Mark Hunt. I don't give a shit who Mark Hunt trains with. There is no way that he can stop a double leg from Brock Lesnar. Nobody can.
If I were to give him like an even matchup as like Mihit versus Mihit, I'd probably give him someone like Todd Duffy. Like,
yeah, Todd Duffy would have been a perfect opponent for Brock Lesnar.
Todd Duffy wanted that fight too.
And Todd's coming off a terrible loss. Like that's not going to sell pay-per-views. And the UFC brought in Brock to sell tickets and pay-per-views.
But you think Brock? I mean, I think Brock. Anybody would sell pay-per-views.
Not, dude. Who cares about Brock versus Todd Lesnar versus Brock versus Mark Hunt? We wouldn't even be talking about Brock versus Todd Duffy right now and how the fight would go.
You wouldn't. I mean, bringing Brock back, you saw the commercial on Saturday night. Nobody knew who he was fighting till Monday, and the internet broke. It was that whole UFC 200 ad, which, by the way,
is my whole point.
An amazing ad. But then it's, can you see me now? And it shows Brock, and everybody's like, what the fuck? Yes. Does it matter who he's fighting to sell? Yes, but in terms of selling UFC 200, they just doubled their pay-per-view buys by having the name Brock Lesnar in the co-main. And they know it's big enough that they're putting it ahead of their women's bantamweight championship and their interim featherweight championship. It is the co-main event.
I mean, the crazy part about this, the whole fight is that what's his name? The ex-champion is on Fight Pass. The 135.
TJ Dillashaw, a son
Sal. Fight Pass on this card. That's crazy.
They need to pad this card.
His last fight was for the title, and now he's on Fight Pass at UFC 200.
Yeah, but that's the same thing as, you know, Aljamain and Caraway. That was arguably one of the best matchups on the fight night. It was on Fight Pass. BJ Penn was going to be on Fox Sports prelims when he was fighting, no matter who he was fighting. They're trying to get people interested into the Fight Pass, get their $10 a month, because there is a lot of money for the UFC there. Yeah. They're $10 a month. The Fox Sports prelims. You know, the most advertising they do during their Fight Pass and their Fox Sports prelims is advertising for the event that night, which I laugh at because you're like, I already know this is happening. But there's people that are like, you know, they set you up to go, yeah, I got to order that pay-per-view.
Yeah,
you put Matt Brown and Damian Maya on the Fox Sports prelims, and people are going, shit, I guess I have to order 198. Not that all other Fox fights.
It's true. But it was crazy. Kelvin Gastelum, by the way, came to my show on Sunday. He shows up, and I'm like, oh, he came late. I'm like, oh, he couldn't make wait for the show. And
he showed up with like 20 minutes left.
I think he was hitting the back. I think he wanted to be seen.
Okay.
It's a very Bubba Jenkins thing to do.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now,
also had Hegan Machado there. You also had Ed Soares there. Sean McCorkle. Sean McCorkle got yelled at by the staff.
I know.
I didn't know what that was about, but I'm like, dude, when you're sitting down, you're pretty much standing up.
And then James Mutsari was there.
Oh, he was?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't notice that.
Yeah. It was great. Listen. That is our podcast. People, do not hit up CB and give him a hard time for the Michael Bisping thing. Please do not, okay?
Can we touch on one thing before we end that's very important?
Yes.
Kimbo Slice.
Yes. Rest in peace to Kimbo Slice.
Yeah, sad.
Very sad.
A guy was a definition of a warrior. I mean, the American dream. Dude went from YouTube to fighting in the UFC.
He was the main event for two of the five biggest MMA fights. Events ever on cable television.
Wow.
His fight, I think it was the Petruzzelli fight on Elite XC, and I think the other one might have been his, or no, I think the Tank Abbott fight, and then one, the Bellator with Shamrock was like two of the biggest, highest rated MMA events of all time on cable television.
I did not know that. So rest in peace, Kimbo Slice. So that is our podcast today. Tomorrow we have Hanato on. Should be fun. So listen, once again, guys, because I don't want to hear CB fucking complain, all right?
Oh, see?
All right?
Here we go again.
Do not give him a hard time. Okay?
Sean, do you have a podcast? Do you all need somebody?
Dude, Adam just made it so much worse for you, dude. Right.
I know. Yeah, that's what he does.
He's going
to
give him
it's all right.
Now.
I got my parents coming to his dime bar tonight.
CB is my friend.
The fuck out of him.
Yeah, he is my friend, and I do not want him to have any kind of stress in his life, okay? He's a fragile, delicate soul.
Oh, my
okay?
God, dude.
Yeah, listen, so...
He's a delicate
I quit.
Smells like sunshine.
So, you quit?
I quit. Tyler can have the belt.
Oh, no, no. Tyler, really? Can I have the belt? Listen, it's a $600 belt, right?
No, actually, it goes to Caraway because he's the most roasted.
Oh, okay. Caraway does get the belt. So, what do we do with phone calls? We do phone calls yet?
I guess Snowski just got the cable today.
You got it today? All right, so we're going to start doing phone calls again on the show. But I like it without no phone calls. Oh, thanks, CB, making a fucking face. Listen, I want to thank Mac Danzig, Vince Pichel, CB Gold, and Sean Jacoby, okay? American Icon Autographs. He used to sponsor us. Hopefully one day he'll sponsor us again. We fucking need sponsors. I need posters for this fucking
I got
thing.
You 18 of them coming.
He's got me
18. What are you talking about?
I've
They're
been
coming
his,
on
I've,
Thursday.
I've been to
yeah,
his
James
shop.
James Beam and Rowe and him. That's
this
it.
This dude's got thousands of it's fucking posters. Millions of. How many posters
of his posters are straight right now.
Neither are you. Okay, so... Roasted. All right, so
roasted.
Listen.
Meanwhile, you stare at my girlfriend every time she's in studio, but
she's
straight.
She's smoking
I'm
hot.
Not straight.
Your girlfriend's hot. All right, it's a beard.
I know. I upgraded.
Now, listen,
you should see the next one.
So, next what?
I said I upgraded. You should see the next one.
Nice. He's doing my jokes back to me. Listen, July 4th.
I've memorized your entire set.
UFC fight weekend. I will be at the Stratosphere Hotel performing at the LA Comedy Club. If you want free tickets, hit me up. I will hook you up with free tickets. Okay, I know Frank Mir says he might perform on the show. Leslie Smith, we're also doing a podcast live from Vegas that weekend. Okay, yes, you're invited.
I'm not gonna be there, dude. I can't come to Vegas that week.
Well, we're still doing a podcast. Okay, coming up next week, I will be at the Comedy Cave in Calgary. Following week at the Comedy Club in Rochester. New
you
York.
The Dime Bar every Tuesday night?
Every Tuesday night at the Dime Bar. It's going to be fun. It's a great guy.
Tonight's
Damon,
a good lineup.
They got Damon Wayans Jr. tonight. It's going to be good.
And you got Tyler Bowe in
his
last
Tyler
performance.
Bowe, his last LA performance.
What's with the, I've seen the posters on Facebook saying Dana White, and then who else is going to be there?
No, that was last week. That was at the Laugh Factory.
Yeah, it was Dana, Matt Sarah, and Dean Thomas.
You are right on top of it, dude.
Yep,
all right, so... So listen,
I was going to go this Tuesday to that one.
Oh, thanks.
I'm on my way there now.
Well, listen, thank you. Okay, once again, do not harass CB Gold. All right, so, but if you do,
subliminal
make sure it's
messages.
Very funny
subliminal
and tag
messages.
Me.
At least, right, if it's at least if it's clever, it's fine. But if you're going to send me fucking hate tweets of like, you don't know shit and nobody likes you, blah, blah, blah. Like the underground is tearing me apart. But then there's another thread that everybody loves me. So I'm like, well, fuck you guys. If I got 20 haters, I'm working up to 40.
Yes, because you're very good at dealing with that. All right, so listen.
And Steve's actually a really cool dude because he said he had a Bane mask for me, and he pulled through, and he gave me a Bane mask.
I have two.
What's
I have
the,
two
what,
for Vince.
What do you have?
Bane
mask.
From Batman?
Yeah.
He asked. He
yeah,
put a
I was,
tweet out.
I was working, and I was up in an attic, and I have a respirator on, and I'm just like up in an attic putting in like junction boxes because I'm an electrician now. So he's tweeting me back like, hey, I got a real-life Bane mask you can have for me on Instagram or it was
Twitter,
right?
Twitter.
Yeah, Twitter. And he told me he had one. I was like, oh, sweet. Like, cool. Like, you know what I mean? Like, someone showed
and
like,
held
hooked
it
me up.
Since that was like, what,
so if anybody wants you to
ago?
Send them stuff, just tweet CB. He will send you whatever
what
you want.
What happened to the t-shirt contest?
We
have a winner. The problem is they're like $9 to make, but then I don't know if I want to sell. I'm going to have to buy like 500 of them. I don't know if I
want
to sell 500.
I just want one.
Yeah, I'll fucking make them.
I'm
all right,
a guy that can make your shirts cheaper than that.
Really?
Yeah.
So you think the darkness is your ally. Don't worry about it.
Adam's not having it.
That's our podcast.
That was
thank
the weirdest
you, Joe.
Look ever.
Take care, guys. Thank you.